one-sided glass. It is 4 o'clock. Time to get started. And it looks like, is Robert going to sit down in front of the race? It's a race. Oh, that's too close to call. Hey, Danny, yours, Danny. Would you lead us in prayer, sir? Stand it up. I didn't want to make either one of those guys stand back up again. That. This evening, we are going to just very quickly introduce a, that's good, slam that against your chest, another Bible study method. I'm going to pass this around so you can thumb through it. It's the evangelism made simple. You can do it. Is the, put out by Stephen Rogers. I think he is in either Indiana or Illinois. Can't remember which now. I passingly know Stephen, see him at evangelism or at lectureships from time to time, but I can't remember where he's preaching now. It's one of those upper states. Anyway, we're in the questions and answers style of Bible study. That's what the last 2 weeks are about. And there are dozens, I don't know, at least a good 15 or 20 of them that have been widely distributed among us through the years, and then just about everybody has one, stop in a church somewhere and somebody's developed one. There's all kind of different methods. Probably the most widely distributed among us would probably be either Open Bible Study or Fishers of Men. Probably Open Bible Study has more copies out simply because they don't have a training class to go along with it. They're all fairly much the same. And I went with Stephen's just because it's newer, and Stephen is still very much actively developing it and distributing it, which is not necessarily the case with some of the others. But I'm just going to pass this around. I've got the it's a 14-lesson series. Obviously, if you get all 14 of them, you've done something really, really big there. But it is pretty much standalone in terms of each individual outline. So if you've got somebody you want to study a particular topic with, you can just take one of these lessons out. The material that is in here is very, very solid. It's very thorough. Stephen is a very conservative a member of the Lord's Church. I don't think you'll find anything in here particularly objectionable at all. He is east of the Mississippi, which means he does believe in word-only indwelling. You'll notice that on his lesson of the Holy Spirit, but I don't think you'll find any particular position that he writes. He talks about the influence of the Spirit through the Word, and I think the actual points that he puts in there you'd probably agree with. He just doesn't make some other arguments that perhaps you would make. Other than that, I don't think anybody would have any question about anything in here. He's rock solid, and it's more extensive than most of them that you get. It's not even that bad of a study series to go through on your own, because it's got a lot of material in it. This is the teacher's manual. The bottom of it says you can do it. The other side of it is the class manual, the student manual, and it says the same, evangelism made simple, and the bottom of it is you can know it. And they are pretty much identical. When I pass this around for you, you'll notice that on some lessons, actually all the lessons, there are certain words you'll find that are highlighted, bold-faced, and underlined. If you had the student workbook, obviously that would be the fill-in-the-blank type question that you're trying to get them to answer. But it's just a typical class outline that you've seen hundreds of. It's one reason I didn't get a copy for everybody. The other reason is the actual teacher's binder is fairly expensive to people that may or may not be using it in the future. So I'll pass it around, let you look at it. You'll notice occasionally, if you spend enough time looking through it, you'll be reading through a lesson, and it'll say at the end of a reference to a verse, chart number 3 or something like that. Well, surprisingly enough, if you flip to the back, you have all kind of Bible charts to go along with your study, okay? That'll help help illustrate the different points that are being made. So it starts, you notice that the approach is topical, all right? We've been looking at even the Bible study chain we had last week that we went over. It is topical, but you're moving verse by verse, so it has the feeling of a textual kind of study. But usually when those things are put together, you are making a topical point. You're studying authority to start with, and then you're going to baptism or whatever you're going to next. It's still a thought-by-thought, concept, topic-by-topic kind of approach. This is just straight that way. So every time you sit down with your student, you have a certain topic that you're going to be studying. And so, as I said, there's all 14 of them. It starts with God. It ends up with church and with worship. It's the same structure you'll see time and time again when we put these things together. We start with God. We move to this goes to all three members of the Godhead. Existence of God, Father, Son, Spirit. Talks about effectively the need of salvation. The Bible is the answer. The difference in the covenants. You are, in fact, one who needs to be forgiveness of sins. And then we start dealing with the plan of salvation. Faith, repentance, confession. Then baptism. Okay, then we've got baptism taught. What are we going to teach them next? Well, we're going to teach them the place of the church in regard to baptism. And then after that, what are we going to talk about? We're going to talk about the worship of the church, and then the organization of the church. And then, of course, the change Christian living that goes along with it. Just exactly the structure that you would expect to see with it. And I'm going over it quickly simply because it's very, there's nothing novel about it. But don't pass that off as I don't think this is good. This is very solid material. It's very well done. And it has the advantage of still being very actively marketed and supported. So if you've got a question about it, about how to use it, or something of that nature, you can pick up the phone and call Stephen. I mean, these are brethren in Christ. We don't have elite publishing people that you can't get a hold of. Now, if you pick up the phone and call the church he's preaching at, he'll pick it up and answer and talk to you. Okay, you can get a hold of somebody. That's why I went over it with you. But just pass that around. We'll leave it in the back after you're done with it, and let's just work that around through the rest of the class. And if you have any questions about it, feel free to raise your hand and interrupt me as we go forward. All right? So that is the evangelism made simple. I know when I mentioned I was going to be teaching it, I know Scott Taft uses that when he does Bible studies with people, and he is a very big fan of it. So if you want some firsthand experience with it, or the testimony of firsthand experience with it, go talk with Scott about it, and he'll gladly talk to you, I'm sure, if I know anything about Scott. Talking is not one of his backed up things. If you all would pass these out. The rest of the time, I want to go over, we've spent a lot of time about method of actual studies, and that is not necessarily the hardest thing for some people. Sometimes the hardest thing is just getting the study started. How do you get the conversation going? And then how do you deal with the conversation from that point forward? There is a group among us called the Weak Hip Ministries. They are in Louisiana. And I am just forgetting as I say that right off the top of my head where they're from. Do you know, Danny? You ever heard of them? We Care Ministries. They are in, doesn't matter, they're in Louisiana. They actually have a whole program, okay? And this is taken from some of their support materials from their program. The We Care Ministries helps churches run week and a half, 2 week long campaigns. And they will bus people in. There are some retired people, so on. They bring their RVs, kind of like the you ever heard of the Sojourners or groups like that. Same kind of concept. They don't necessarily bring enough people to run the whole campaign, but they run enough people to support your campaign. And so they bring them in, they knock doors with you, and that kind of stuff. So they have their own study material to go along with it, and it's as good as anybody else's. But the one thing I found in looking at their materials during the year is this little flow chart. And it is, I think it is handy for a certain group of people, like Mike Pollack, who might appreciate a if-then kind of sequence about how do I actually have this conversation with people. I say Mike Pollack, but of course, I'm not far from that. And when I read it, I said, oh, that's helpful. So it's obviously any tool like this is not going to be perfect, but I thought I'd go over it with you. It might spark some ideas and something of that nature. And we can go from there. Now, I started printing this stuff, and it turned out green. I think I was out of black ink in my printer. So that's not good, but I hope you can read it well enough. I know you can't get it off the screen. That's why I printed it for you. There are basically three main questions. Everybody see where it says question one, question two, question three. Those are the three main questions you're trying to get asked and then answered. Now, underneath each of those, we have a different path based upon the responses that they give, and we'll go over some of those in just a moment. But the basic questions are this. If the Lord were to return right now, do you know without any doubt you'd be going to heaven? Now that has a lot of different answers that can come from it, and we'll talk about some of those in a minute. But that's where we're starting with. The second question, based upon their answer, the second main one you're wanting to find out is, does this person consider themselves to be a Christian? There are some people who would say they think they're going to heaven who would also then say, no, I'm not a Christian. Those things are no longer mutually exclusive. And then based upon their answer to that one, the third question is the one that actually moves you in to your Bible study. Well, can we sit down and talk about it? And that's what we're going to. We want to get to the third question. One thing I like about this flowchart is it doesn't try to get everybody to question number three. A lot of times we fail to begin that conversation because there's the fear of rejection. There's the fear of, well, what if they say no? All right, this flowchart gives you the out of when they say no. Because there are some people that you're not going to be able to set up a Bible study with. And baked into the concept here is, in terms of your responsibility, our responsibility of going out and evangelizing, we don't have to be successful. We don't have to get everybody down to question three. If they disqualify themselves before question three, okay, well, that's not okay in the eternal sense, but at least from our perspective, that's okay. We haven't lost anything. We haven't failed. We've still gone out and we've attempted to do the very thing that we were called to do, and so we've done it. All right, so let's start looking at this just answer by answer as we kind of move through it. So you got somebody you've met, you're sitting at the gas station with, or you don't sit at the gas station, you're sitting at the service department in the car dealership, whatever it is. All right, it would be good if you could commit this to memory on some level, because if you're looking off the sheet, that's going to be a little awkward. But you've got it committed to memory, and you ask them. Somehow the topic comes up, you bring it up. Do you think you're going to heaven? Now the question here is more specific. Do you, without any doubt, if Jesus came right now, would you be going to heaven? What's the answer to that? Well, there are three main answers a person can give to that. Yes, no, and I don't know. All right? So the first one on the left-hand side, the second line, the left-hand side, simply says in quotes, no. Some people will answer that question no. Now, there are different reasons why somebody would answer that question no. The one we would expect historically in the United States for someone to give for that answer is, well, I'm a sinner. I'm lost. But there is another category of people, at least one other category of people, who might answer that question no. And they would be an atheist, secularist, someone who doesn't believe in the concept of heaven. So you get the question, no, or you get the answer, no. Well, what do you do with it? I really like the next question. Does that bother you? You see the next line underneath it? under the no, does that bother you? Okay? Now, is that going to bother the atheist? No, it's not going to bother the atheist at all. Okay? Somebody else might say no. Well, if the person says no, the next line down, you've got it, no, when I think about it, and then yes. If the person says no, what's the response? Well, do you remember? Could you remember that I asked you about this? Now, I personally might give a little bit of more explanation in that. Because if the person is an atheist, I might want a little clarification on that. But if it doesn't bother them, if they're an atheist and they're still not, if they're set in their decision of being an atheist, what are you going to do about it? You can present them all the evidence in the world you can about the existence of God, and if they're content with that point in their life at that, not saying give up, but hey, could you at least remember I asked you about it? If you ever have any thoughts about it, leave them with that kind of response. Because that's all you're called to do. All right? So sometimes you reach a dead end with somebody. They don't know that they're going to heaven. They don't think they're saved. And it doesn't bother them at all. Well, then if you tell them, well, you need to be saved. Well, they're going to say, no, don't. And now what do you have? Instead of a study, instead of an opportunity, you have an argument. And the one thing you're not going to be able to do successfully is argue somebody into the kingdom of Christ. Doesn't work that way. Sometimes I tell people when I was doing premarital and marital counseling, especially to the men, I would say this to them. You cannot argue somebody out of the way they feel. When your wife says to you, I'm mad, and then you provide her five reasons why she should not be mad, all you have done is now give her six reasons to be mad. Whatever the first one was, and then your five. Okay? Same thing here. When you come across somebody in evangelism who is perfectly content with where they are, you've got to be able to distinguish between what is actually an opportunity and what is not. Because if you simply take the atheist and you feel it so deeply, you want to move them, you want to change them, you want to help them, but they're not looking for help, and you start wearing on them and talking to them and talking to them and talking to them and talking to them, all you're doing is reinforcing the opinion that they have of Christians, which is likely that you're bossy and know-it-alls and judgmental and so on and so forth. And instead of opening a door by continuing a pursuit of somebody who's not yet ready, you might actually be closing the door in the future. So it's okay to accept the question or the answer sometimes. No. Here's your off-ramp. Okay? Now, a much more common response that you'll get is that non-committal. This one puts it as, when I think about it. There are those people who don't really know everything there is to know about God. They're not certain about their faith. They're not certain about salvation, heaven, all of that. And so you ask them, well, does it bother you that you don't know that you're going to heaven? And they say, well, I'm not sure. Or when I think about it. Or maybe. You can get all kinds of different responses. But any of that non-committal response, look what the suggestion is. You then follow that up with the question. Well, can we talk about that? See, when they say there is uncertainty, that's an open door. Uncertainty is an opportunity to find out whether there's interest. And so when you hear in any of these, anywhere in the flow chart, anywhere you're dealing with somebody, anytime somebody expresses doubt, I got at least two salesmen in here, and Jim and Danny, the customer across the table from you says, do you get up and walk away? That's like sick 'em to a dog. It's less than a no. What am I going to do? Well, I'm going to sit here a little while and try and turn that into a yes. So you hear the doubt. Can we talk about it? Can we think about that together for a moment? Well, what are you going to get? Either a yes or a no. All right? If the answer is yes, slide to the right on your paper. If the answer is no, well, they just turned down your Bible study. What do you say to them? Could you remember that we talked about that at some time? If you ever have any questions about it, if you ever want to talk about it, come see me. Okay? You know, I'm concerned about you. If it were me, I'd be concerned not knowing. But hey, if you're not ready to talk, that's fine. Just remember we talked about it. Leave the door open. Leave it on good terms. You got an opportunity. All right? Now, if the person says, yeah, that bothers me, you slide down to, well, are you a Christian? See, that's going to be the next transition. Because you're going to be making the point at some level, well, you need to be a Christian in order to go to heaven. Now, you don't necessarily have to ask, you know, this is a flow chart. Have a little personality. All right? Mike? All right, now let's go back up to the first question again. We dealt with the negative side of it. No. The other two sides, notice again what we do with the doubt. I don't know. I think so. I sure hope I'm going to heaven. We take the maybe as a yes. And then if the person says yes, we're going to ask them then the next question. Are you a Christian? Now what we're asking, of course, from our perspective is, are you in the covered by the blood of Christ, a member of His church, so on and so forth? It is possible we got to question number two without establishing that fact. Because there are a lot of people who might answer, I don't know, maybe so, hope so, or yes, that we still need to get some clarity on. So that's the point of the next question. Next question is, are you a Christian? The answer to that question is a no. Okay? Well, that doesn't necessarily mean the person's never heard the gospel. So you ask them, were you ever a Christian? Did you grow up in a Christian home? Did you ask them something like that? Okay, if they say no to that, they might very well be a secularist, and then we'll deal with that in just a second. All right? Of course, the question that could very well be yes. And if we do, we're going to actually move to the next question as well. Notice, though, on the second one, going back up to the second question, are you a Christian? Notice how the arrow, for I don't know or maybe so, points back to, were you ever a Christian? Okay, because you're dealing here then with a person who at one time perhaps was active in their faith and is no longer, they haven't necessarily renounced their faith, but they've become inactive. We've got a lot of that going around. And so when you ask them, are you a Christian, you may get a little hemming and hawing in terms of the answer because they grew up in a quote-unquote Christian home. They may think they are, but they don't actually have any connection to it, and so you've got to kind of feel that out. Now, if the person then says, were you ever a Christian? And the question they say answer to that is no. Look at what the next question is. We're in under question two, still in that first column. The next question is, do you love God? What are you trying to get to? Yeah, you're about to find out if this person is an atheist, this person, where is this person's mind? And so again, you don't have to ask exactly those words. But do you love God? That's a great place to start in terms of trying to get this person back on track. Turn their attention back to God. Do you love God? Okay? Some people are going to answer that question, no. No. Maybe they don't even believe in Him. And if you don't believe in Him, you're certainly not going to say that you love Him. All right? Now, notice how we got here. We got here either because somebody said, they said no, or I don't know, yes, and we're questioning the Christianity. The person says yes to going to heaven and no to being a Christian. We've got to make the connection between how are you getting to heaven and God. So it is at least possible somebody got to this point on the chart having said, yeah, I'm going to go to heaven. But no, I don't have any love for God. Now, you could be talking to your definition of God, your definition of heaven. Maybe you're talking to somebody of a Muslim faith. Maybe you're talking to somebody, Eastern religion or something of that nature who just says heaven in order to, in sort of an accommodative way to talking with Christians. Who knows? If they say, I don't know God, well, we're going to go back on the other side. Okay? That's where I would take them. Okay? Because the no, what we're looking for here is the exit ramp. Is this person done having this conversation? So do you love God? No, I don't want to have anything to do, and they go off. Well, again, take a moment. Take a moment. Because if that person say no because they're an atheist, before you say, hey, remember we had this conversation, just take a moment. But if they said no and they're an atheist, if you're at this point and you're an atheist, probably you follow the flow chart down the no, does it bother you? No, there. That's probably where you found out this person was an atheist or a secularist. If you got down to this point of the flow chart, there's probably a belief in God in that person on some level. Okay?
If they say, I don't know God, you say, would you like to know?
Yeah, that's exactly right. Because that's again one of those, iffy things. Now, think about that. Think of that through, and that's probably why there's not a slot on the flow chart for it. If the person is if they're definite that they're going to heaven or something of that nature, if they allow for the existence of heaven, the likelihood of having no conception of God or something of that nature goes down greatly. Okay. But yeah, you're absolutely right. If you find that uncertainty, yeah, I don't really know who God is. Well, how's the answer to that? Well, can we talk about him? All right, that's how you'd fill in that blank. Exactly. All right. So look for the uncertainty. Look for the doubt. That's where you go and try and judge the interest. That's basically the point here. We're trying to get to the point of uncertainty. So that when we get to the point of uncertainty where the person says, well, I'm not sure, then I can ask them. All right, now when we get to the other side of the chart, we're going to turn that over in just a second because there's one path where there's not necessarily uncertainty that we'll get to. Yes, sir. Using this path, you would most likely figure that out. First question, they would say no. More than likely. Are you without a doubt 100% certain that you're going to go to heaven if Jesus returns right now? I guess a absolutely principled agnostic who says, I do not know either way, a non-prejudiced agnostic might answer that question, I don't know. But in practical terms, most of the agnostics I have come across, maybe they may say they're agnostics, but amazingly enough, they always come down on the side of he doesn't exist.
Yeah, I think an agnostic has an idea why he or she is an agnostic.
Yep.
Probably going to say no.
And so that's where under the second no. Are you going to heaven? No. Does it bother you? No. That's probably the path they're going. Now, it is possible an agnostic, it may not bother them in the sense that they're not going to heaven, but it may bother them that, like Solomon, you become a materialist. Everything is under the sun, and you may be looking forward to a time in your future, what becomes of me after I die. If I were an agnostic, especially as I aged, that question would really start to bother me. So it might, the fact that they don't believe in an afterlife absolutely, they might say, yeah, that does bother me sometimes. But I would handle that in exactly the same question if I'm using this process. Because at that point, I'm going to say, hey, well, let's talk about that. Now, from there, I've got a different study. If we went back a slide, which I just put away, you know, if we got the, since we talked about the Stephen Rogers material, you know, I'm obviously, if that's the situation and I'm going to sit down with a Bible study material with them, I'm going to start right at the very top. Whereas if I've got an absolute Bible believer who said no, no, and all of that, then I might start, you know, down with sin or something of that nature. Maybe the authority of the Scriptures, depending on the kind of person I'm talking with. So I've got the study, but now I've got to evaluate the person I'm studying with and what material and what path I need to go with them. So, yeah. Okay. Okay. And that is, either that is a passive-aggressive no, or it is an actual intellectual opportunity to have a Bible study, and that gets real hard to distinguish between the two. Okay.
Where do you go with that? It feels like an atheist, the passive aggressive that you're talking about. But that's not quite the way the conversation goes.
Knowing when to keep studying with somebody and when not to keep studying with somebody is a really tough choice. One of the things I have always tried to remind myself about it, assuming I have the time, and I'm not neglecting other studies or other things I ought to be doing, those kind of things. Even in the most difficult studies I have had, even if I wasn't benefiting the person, I would continue them so long as I was benefiting me. And, you know, I know Danny could probably attest to this too, but you learn more about holding Bible studies from the ones that go bad than you ever do from the ones that take 10 minutes and the person says, I want to be baptized. There's a Southern Baptist lady in Batesville, Mississippi. I've forgotten her name. Young lady, red hair. She was the most stubborn and cantankerous lady I ever studied with. Man, she was hard. But for a 22, 23-year-old guy fresh out of school holding his first adult Bible studies on his own, she was exactly what I needed. Okay? So I studied with her for a long time, and even then I knew, no, this ain't going anywhere. Okay? But that's a real hard thing to decide. All right? So anyway, still on that second question, on the no side or the I don't know side. Somebody says, were you ever a Christian? And the person says, yeah, I was a Christian. All right? If, were you ever a Christian, it says yes. It takes you over into that big block where you're trying to define the point of salvation. We'll come back to that in just a moment. But if they say, do you love God? And the answer to that question is yes. So here's a person that is in some way said they either think they're going to heaven, they're uncertain of it, or no, but it bothers them that they're not. The person says, yeah, I love God. Your response to that is wonderful. That leads you directly through the third question. So you've got somebody here who has, in some way, either never become a Christian or has turned away from their faith. And what you say to them is, that's obviously when you get to the point, They know that they know the concept of sin, whatever the case is. They may be bothered about heaven. And you say to them, well, then, can I tell you how I found the Lord? Now, that's a pretty good way of phrasing it, or at least the conceptualizing the thought. Because it's not combative. One of the hardest things for me, at least mentally, about the week-long campaigns and the door-knocking things that we did was knocking on the door. And it's real hard to knock on that door and have them on the other side of the door and offer them a Bible study without it sounding like, I think you're about to go to hell. And that's the first 30 seconds of our relationship together. I mentally, that really struggled with me in terms of being an effective door knocker. You do not want to go door knocking with me. It's not pretty. It's just not. So this way doesn't necessarily do that. It puts the thought back on you. So here is a person, remember, we're trying to find that point of doubt or that point of need. And so what you're doing is you've identified it. This person loves God, but they're not certain about their fate. They're not certain about heaven. And you say to them, instead of, well, you need to be, you say, you mind if I take a few moments and tell you how I found Jesus? So that's about you. And that's not a bad way to get the study started. Now, if you do it that way, keep in mind, you're going to have to be careful in terms of your material choice. Because if you're telling them what you're about to do is tell them how you found the Lord, how you found the gospel, and you start with, does God exist? Unless there's something else in that conversation, it's kind of a non-starter. It just, wait a minute, what just happened here? That's not what you told me we were going to be talking about. So you may need to be at least a little bit aware of that and you know, take some time and not have a study. Just take some time and have a conversation. Make a relationship, which then as you begin to do that, as you talk about, you know, if you're going to tell somebody how you found Jesus, what would you do? Well, you'd probably talk to them about maybe your life story a little bit, maybe some of that. Maybe you talk to them at some point, you're going to open your Bible and you're going to start talking about Bible stories, right? Okay. Once you've done that, once you get to the point of getting the Bible open, now you're free to go wherever you need to go and pick whichever method you need to pick in terms of your Bible study. So just understand that simply because they say yes, that's okay. We're not robotic here. Okay, we're trying to find another way of we need to sit down and actually be interested in the person and just talk to them about anything you would talk about. Okay? And start that conversation. Now, back to the other one. We've got 7 minutes. So the person has said either they're going to heaven, or they don't know, or they're going to heaven, or they know they're not going to heaven, or it bothers them. You ask them, are you a Christian? They answer the question, yes. Or, as we saw, were you ever a Christian? And they answer the question, yes. Now, most of the time when you're studying with people, you encounter out in the society, I think the last surveys I saw, about 70% of the United States still says they're Christian. We would think that number to be significantly lower. And so when we ask that question to somebody, we don't mean the same thing they mean. And so now you have to begin to take that instead of it's not a roadblock, it's not the end of discussion, it needs to be a point for further discussion. Okay? And so the person says, yes. Okay? Under least here are 10 questions. And I don't know that I would sit here with a pen and paper and go through them all. But look at what they are. How old were you? Where was it? Was it on a Sunday during a revival? Was it at home? Was it at night? How did you respond? What did you do to get right with God? Did you pray about it? All those kind of things. What are you doing? Well, you're trying to get their story. All right? You're a Christian. That's great. How did you become a Christian? Then just let them start talking. Let them tell their story. Your parents Christians? Did you grow up a Christian? Did you go to church? Those kind of questions. And eventually they're going to get to the point where they tell you, well, this is where I, you know, to use their language or something that you might hear, this is where I accepted Jesus, or this is where Jesus saved me or something. And that's what those questions are trying to get to. How old were you? What question are you really asking when you ask how old were they? Were they christened? All right. Was it on a Sunday or during a revival or was it at home? See, what are you after? There was a baptism involved. That's really what you're asking. Okay? Was it at night? How did you respond? Okay, yes, ma'am. I raised my hand and Jesus came. Something of that nature, all right? What did you do to get right with God? And then it prompts you with one. Did you pray? Because that's probably what they, probably what it was. If they weren't christened as a baby, they probably had some kind of, you know, especially if it's sinner's prayer, some kind of experience like that. What did you do to get right with God? And so, assuming they answer that question, yes, are you telling me then you were saved? You were saved with prayer. I would be careful how I worded that one. That's kind of pointed, but clarify it with them. Just have a conversation about that prayer. It doesn't have to be, you know. Let them talk more than you talk. Let them explain it to you until you get. But you want them to acknowledge that their salvation occurred at that prayer or at that meeting or whatever it was. And then it says, oh, you were saved on Tuesday night, then baptized in that church Sunday morning, right? I've heard guys phrase it this way when they're talking about studying with the Baptist or something of that nature. So you were saved, and then you ask the question something along the lines of, well, then how much later was it then that you were baptized? Just assume that they didn't think their baptism was for the forgiveness of sins. How many people have ever studied, particularly with a Southern Baptist? And you start studying with them without clarifying this before you study with them. All right? When you get to Acts 2:38 for the remission of sins, 100% of the time, a good old Southern Baptist will tell you, that's exactly what I did. No, it's not. There is not a true Southern Baptist pastor anywhere. If he's tied to the Southern Baptist Convention, if he's faithful to his group, there is not one anywhere teaching that. I've never done this personally, but some of my instructors in school used to say, of course, they were studying back when this was more prevalent, when Baptists were more thoroughly schooled in their doctrine. They would say, well, let's pick up the phone and call your pastor. Because he is not. He is not going to tell them that they need to be baptized. He does not. One thing it's great to do, particularly if you know they're a Baptist or any of these other groups that believe in faith only, but then also practice baptism, write it down. Once you're in the study with them, write it down. Don't do it now. We're trying to set up the study. But once you're in the study with them, actually write it down.
And then...
That's exactly what I'm doing with it. Now, I want to be in a position where I don't have to use that paper. But I write it down in my notes, and then I put it aside. And it never comes back out until the study's over. And in the best case scenario, I don't have to bring the paper back out. Just having the conversation is usually good enough. Because if you bring the paper back out, guess what that person's going to say? You tricked me. Something like that. They're not happy when you bring the paper back out. So I don't want to bring it out, but I want it. Okay? Because if you don't do something to clarify it, the person sitting across the table from you is not as well schooled about baptism as you are. You know more about baptism than any Baptist or whatever that you're studying with that you'll ever come across. You do. Because they don't talk about it. It's not part of their culture. It is ours. You know more about it. And when they hear you talk about it, they will run it. They will interpret it through their own language. And all of a sudden, you've got them telling you that's exactly what they did. All right? So that's what this is trying to do. These 10 questions are trying to get them to a point of defining how it is that they became a Christian. And so the last question is, underneath that is, after they get done, you say something along the lines of, well, that's wonderful, man. I'm so glad that you love God and that you're trying to serve Him and doing all those things. But I got to tell you, you know, that's not the way I found the Lord. Would you mind if I took a few minutes and told you how I did it? See, they just did it for you. That question is going to be answered yes, a whole lot more than not, because it's fair. They got their turn, and that's why it's important to let them do a lot of talking. You're not trying to start an argument. You're just trying to be interested in them. Find out about them, and you honestly are trying to be interested in them. Find out about them, where they're coming from. You'll find out all kinds of stuff when they start talking. And then you get the opportunity to say, you know, hey, that's great. Can I tell you about my life? And when you tell them about your life, again, you're not pulling out a 3-point sermon outline and preaching it to them. You're going to start talking to them, hey, I was baptized on a Sunday, but you know, I didn't get saved on Tuesday and get baptized on Sunday. We did it at the same time. We did it that same hour, that same time. So you can highlight the differences without necessarily starting an argument, which hopefully at the end of that discussion, you've got a question now at this point, right? I've told you about it. Now what am I going to ask you? Well, why do you think those are different? Where can we go from here? And you got a chance to set up a Bible study. All right? Paula, did you have something? That's very good. Yep, getting them to write it out. Great idea. Great idea to have them in their own writing. Now, whether I write it or they write it, before I put it away, I will say to them, I just want to make sure I understand. Is this what you did? And they'll say, yeah, because that's usually because you wrote it down. Okay. That's fine. I just want to know where we're coming from. Go to side. And then you start the study. But yeah, having them write it down is a great idea. Yes, sir.
Question number two, are you a Christian? Most of the people I think we'll be talking to have a very generic definition of Christianity and what a Christian means.
Yep.
And not specific.
Yep.
I even say in the Lord's church, many people still use a very generic description of a Christian. Just the other day, all of the people moving in next to us, they're Christians. Oh, really? You know what I mean?
I know exactly what you mean. And that's the point of these 10 questions. Well, the point of these 10 questions is not to interrogate somebody. What you're looking for again is the opportunity to, in this instance, I guess you're trying in that sense to create the doubt. Because your next statement after they're done is, well, that's not the way that I did it. And so now by telling your story back to them, you get the opportunity to see whether or not the difference of your story and the difference of their story piques their interest. So this is not at all an interrogation. You're actually looking for the point of a point of entrance. And if you're not going to get it through interrogation, you just got to get it by spending enough time talking to the person, getting to know them a little bit. And it will present itself to go back and then have that conversation. All right? Now, that's this flow chart. By no means a perfect thing. There's never going to be a perfect one with these things. But it's one of the very few attempts I have seen to try and put a tool in people's hands to get the conversation started. So I hope there's at least something in here that you can use, you can look forward to, and put it in practice in your own way. All right? We are out of time. Thank you very much.